Hey, it's Don Coscarelli, filmmaker. I just wrote a book. Check it out. It's called Fiction, Tales from the World of Phantasm. And it can teach you all the things that you never knew about the Phantasm film series. A lot of interesting stuff. Horror, violence, not much sex. Check it out. Now available on Amazon, paperback, and Kindle.
This is The Gala Show. I'm your reporter on the beat, Gala Avery. On this episode, you may know my guest as an adjunct professor in the film video department at CalArts, a lover of cats as seen by her top four movies on Letterboxd, or as the director of film programs at the Academy Museum of Motion Pictures. But here on The Gala Show, I know her as the lady in Los Angeles with perhaps the best sense of fashion, KJ Ralph Miller. Hey, KJ.
Gala. Oh, my God. That's ridiculous. Honestly, and I love it.
I see you on Instagram doing these, like, mirror selfies. I look. I'm like, who is that? I'm like, wait, that's KJ? And I'm like, KJ has, like, this, like, eclectic vintage style. I don't know, like, what decade you would say that's from.
Oh, I mean, I really don't think about it in terms of, like, I gravitate toward the 60s or a specific, it's like, even style, because I think it's, like, trying on different identities. It's so fun. And it's really, like, I've always loved clothes and I've always loved expressing myself through what I wear. And only recently, like, I first started posting just stories on Instagram, but only to close friends. Mm-hmm. And then a good friend of mine who's a little bit older, I really look up to her, and she was like, you should be putting these on Maine. And I was like, oh, okay.
Well,
I'll
actually
try it.
That leads me to my question that I had for you, actually, because when I see these pictures, as someone who I'm like a lady that's becoming a woman, I just turned 28, so now I'm a woman, but I never had that, like, really self-discovery of style. And sometimes I feel like I'm stuck in between, like, what my style is and, like, who I want to, like, represent myself as. Mm. How did you find and develop your own personal style?
I think it's been honestly a lifelong process. So my mom and my both of my parents joke with me that when I was growing up, I started dressing myself, like, as soon as I was able to, like, as soon as I could make those decisions.
It was in your blood.
Yeah. And I definitely, like, even when I was younger, I went through a very, like, gender fluid phase where one day I would fully dress, like, male identifying. Another day I would dress super girly. So it really, I don't know, it's just always been fun to me. And I did go through a period, like, roughly when I was your age, mm-hmm. like, what, 11 years ago, when I was really self-conscious about that, and I was like, oh, this is actually, like, it's maybe marking me as vain, or, like, it's making me move through the world in a way that maybe I don't want to move through the world, and maybe it's drawing unnecessary attention, but it just brings me so much joy. And also, I mean, in this sort of part of what we're going to talk about, I just really like collecting things, and mm-hmm. I like the hunt. I like the...
Like, so do you like to go thrifting?
I love thrifting.
See, my brother loves to thrift. Shout out Ever. He loves to thrift. I hate thrifting.
Really?
I'm like, he's tried to take me a few times because, like, I want to be the good big sister and I want to go with him. But I'm, like, thrift adverse. I don't know why.
Is it something about, like, touching other people's clothing?
I don't know. It's like there's nowhere to sit.
It's
like I get exhausted. There's so much. It's like overwhelming. Like, the smells are overwhelming. The fabric's overwhelming. The sheer amount. Like, I don't know what I'm going to find. Mm. My ex really loved to thrift. And so he used to take me all the time. So I don't know. It's just.
I really, like, found the places I liked. Like, each place that I've lived, I've sought out, like, consignment stores or mm-hmm. the thrift stores that I know are going to be good. And it's really about selecting that beforehand, too. Because, like, the Goodwill on Hollywood near Vermont is the worst. It's so picked over. It's like, you're not going to find anything there. You're going to go in and you're going to have a miserable experience and you're going to be disappointed and it's overcrowded and, like, it's just so picked through. But I got really lucky when I was working at UCLA and also at CalArts. That should we stop for the cats?
No,
crashing?
The cat. Okay, oh, we are back in the Ralph Miller Casa, which has the cats that attacked Josh, if you don't remember, during the taping. And we also have a pie in the oven.
We have a pie in the oven. We got a cat scratching her scratch post. And
it's cozy Christmas here.
Yeah, we're setting a vibe.
Exactly.
In the Ralph Miller house.
So you developed your style just kind of throughout the ages.
Yeah. And I think, like, first learning what kind of stores are going to, like, yield the best results so that I'm not wasting my time. Mm-hmm. But I also think, like, when I used to work in at UCLA, I would go up to Santa Clarita a lot because mm-hmm. that's where my ex was from,
actually.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
He actually went to CalArts.
Oh, my God. Well, there you go. Yeah. And that Goodwill by CalArts is a fantastic Goodwill.
Yeah.
And I got to the point where, like, if I was on a lunch break or I was on my way home, I'd be like, you know what? I want a chartreuse blazer. Like, that's what I really want today. Like, it'd be great if I could find one. I'd go in and I'd find it.
Oh, the universe handed it to you.
I had a psychic connection with this Goodwill. This makes me sound so Looney Tunes, but I swear to God.
There are worse things to have psychic connections with. Goodwill is okay.
Yeah, it's acceptable. But yeah, I just think, and then Instagram is also, like, weirdly a place where I, like, find people who have maximalist, like, really strange style that I really admire.
So you're a maximalist, like, you define it like that.
I think when I'm at my best, I'm a maximalist, because I tried minimalism and it just, like, it's all about shapes and fabrics, and I'm like, I don't know, I like color and I like contrasts.
Yeah, it's funny, I think, like, for me on my person, I feel like I'm more of, like, a minimalist because I mm-hmm. wear basics a lot, but then at home I'm definitely a maximalist.
And I have, like, the way I decorate
with tons of color, weird patterns, nothing matches, it's uh-huh. exactly how I like it, knickknacks everywhere. Uh-huh. Like, if it's gray, I don't want it. I want, like, orange. I have an orange couch. I have purple chairs.
Hell yeah. I'm like, we have an orange chair in there.
Yeah, I love it. I love color and I love mid-century, so for yeah. me it's like, I love maximalist mid-century. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't bring that to my person, but
I mean, it's whatever you feel like. I feel the most comfortable walking out of the house feeling like I'm making a statement about how I'm feeling that day.
Yeah.
And so that also doesn't adhere to, like, a single decade or a single style. Like, I'm not preppy, I'm not girly, I'm, like, everything everywhere all at once.
Yeah.
Or like, try to be. And sometimes I go through funks where I'm just like, I'm going to wear t-shirts all day and that's fine. But I do kind of, sometimes it does get a little like, too obsessive, and I'll overdress for, like, a Zoom meeting, and I'm like, KJ, you didn't need to do that. Like,
yeah,
nobody
but to
knows.
Be honest, though, it brings me a lot of joy seeing your outfits, because it's, like, so well put together, and it's definitely not a costume. Like, I would never use that word for it, but it's like the style, it's just, like, immaculate. Like, I can imagine seeing it in a movie, some, like, kind of period piece or something. So whenever I see it, I'm like with your Thanksgiving, like, when I saw, like, what you wore to Thanksgiving, I was like, oh my God, that's the most stylish Thanksgiving I've ever seen. So I hope that you keep posting them. It brings me a lot of joy, honestly.
Oh, thank you. Well, I also think, I mean, another place I get inspiration outside of, like, you know, really put together people where it's like their job is doing this on Instagram for yeah. the most part, because they're, like, sort of influencers, is movies. Like, I'll watch mm-hmm. a movie. Actually, a huge style moment for me was Crossing Delancey.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the way that Amy Irving dresses in that movie, because it's late 80s. It's just, like, oh, it's kind of Ralph Lauren adjacent. It's a little Annie Hall. It's, like, perfection. And the hats, she gets this great hat as a gift in the movie. Anyway, that, like, and I was watching The King of Comedy the other day, and I was like, I need to wear what Bernhardt is wearing.
I,
like,
love it.
I need that outfit, and I'm gonna try to recreate it. So I don't know, it's just fun.
It comes from everywhere.
Yeah,
I love it. Now, as always, my guest gets to bring their topic to the mic. KJ, why don't you tell us what your topic is and why you decided to choose it?
My topic is home movies and personal archives. And I decided to choose this topic because, as we were sort of touching on, I love collecting things and creating a history of oneself through objects. But first, time for a commercial break. And we're back.
You guys heard it here. We're going to be talking about home archives and collecting. I'm so excited. 30 minutes on the clock and our time starts now. I had to click it one more time. Right now, you guys. So when you say home archive, I could think of it a few ways. I could think of it as, like, a family archive of, like, family photos, mm-hmm. or I could think of it as, like, someone who has, like, an archive, like a library. Like, you guys have a very wonderful library. Over 1,000 books is technically a library. So how would you define, like, a personal archive?
Yeah, I think there's kind of two things here. There's home movies, right, mm-hmm. which are a very specific thing that's an item that is collected and cherished. And then there's also sort of personal archives. And I think home movies can be found in personal archives, but a personal archive, I think, is really just, like, the stuff that we gather throughout our lives that's meaningful to us and that we make a point of saving.
I love that. Yeah. That's a really nice way to put it, because when you kind of gave me your topic, I was thinking kind of back to my parents and how they have all of these home movies from like when they were younger, and they actually have the slide film. And when I was little, wow. we actually used to watch the slide film of like my parents growing up. And then for my, I'm like born 95. So like my mom has picture books kind of for me. And then around the time my brother is born, 98, is when everything kind of turned digital, especially my family, because my dad was doing photographs digitally. And we don't have any picture books. And all of a sudden we have all of these photos that are kind of just lost. Like we still have them. Mm-hmm. But like our home archive for family stuff is kind of like in the air. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's in the cloud. It's wishy-washy.
Yeah, and I think that that's why, I don't know, I'm kind of big on nostalgia and like memory yeah. and the feelings that come from memory. And so for me, it's kind of a loss, I think, like culturally.
Oh yeah. I mean,
that
I think
we don't, yeah. that like everything has moved digital or it's in the cloud. And it's not made physical. And I pulled out some objects here.
Yeah, she pulled out like this great assortment of objects on the table. I see everything from, actually, tell us, like, pick one and tell us about it.
Yeah, I have two different objects here that are sort of indicative of like a history of home movies and then my own personal history of home movies. So in front of me, I have two VHS tapes. And one of them is my brother's first birthday, which I have because my brother doesn't have a VCR, and he's like, you just hang on to it.
Oh, but I have it. Is he yeah. a little brother or a big brother?
Little brother.
Of course. 2 years younger. Brother. That's like me. My brother and I are 2.5 years apart.
Yeah. So, yeah. yeah. And as the older sister, I also, as the eldest in the family, I also feel like sort of responsible for keeping some of these things. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, where that obligation comes from.
Just but being an older sister.
Yeah.
If you're an older sister, you get it.
Right. You just get it. So there, one of these is my brother's first birthday. And then another is when my dad first bought this camcorder in 1984. He bought it for his business. He owned a business with his dad that sold big machinery that did like die cutting, foil stamping, and for like commercial products. And so he bought that for work, but then he brought it home and started recording me and doing like camera tests with me as a little like blob of a human, just like sitting on the ground, like not like pre-verbal, you know, like testing out lighting, natural lighting. Human. Like I'm not even, I don't remember this. I remember it because I've seen it, right?
Yeah, I have those too. I have yeah. those, like, I remember that memory, but it's like an implanted memory.
Yeah, because you have that photograph.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's just something so powerful. Obviously, like as somebody who works in the film like world, I'm gonna advocate for images being like the most powerful form of memory.
Oh yeah.
And so for whatever reason, the memories on these two tapes are so vivid that I can recall them at any time. Like they're there and I can remember that I was there because I can see them.
That's so interesting. I've heard this thing that it's like when you are the photographer or the videographer and you're looking through the lens of a camera or like your phone, that you actually remember it less. Because you're not the one experiencing it. Mm-hmm. But because you weren't the one videoing these, mm-hmm. but then you're able to rewatch them, I wonder if that like reinforces your memories of them.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I just think that these are two very special tapes. And I have others. Some have been lost to like moves or, mm-hmm. you know, just accidentally getting thrown away. But that I have these and that I've archived them digitally, that I've transferred them and I have
But yeah. you still have this physical copy
I still have them because they remind me that I have this hard drive, because things are on my hard drive. I mean, I couldn't tell you everything that's on my hard drive.
Well, right, I couldn't now. Tell you everything that's on mine. I have like nothing on my laptop and I barely remember what's on my laptop.
You don't know. But when you have, I mean, if you have the luxury of having space to store things, mm-hmm. like my another object I have, which is my first film class that I took, the syllabus from my first film class.
You still
that
have that?
Yeah,
that's
still
this
have
pink
it.
Piece of paper.
Yeah,
with is that Alfred Hitchcock?
With Hitchcock,
with like going shh.
He's going shh. Yeah, this is a class that I took when I was 20 called Film as Literature that literally changed my life and set me on the course of studying film, because before I studied film, I wanted to be an actor. I'm so glad I abandoned that dream, but because that's just not who ultimately I wanted
to
be.
Oh, it has all of your notes on it too.
My notes are there.
Oh, that's
with my like
watch adaptation.
Yeah.
Reality genres. Does it break? Oh, it's so great. The Matrix. Watch outside of class. Cabaret. Wow, this is a good like list
she
of movies.
Was great.
You're going to touch on disturbing, upsetting films that cover homosexuality, incest, sadism, fascism, Christianity, racism, patriotism, domestic abuse, and transsexualism. That's like an archive of the past.
I know, of 2004, almost 20 years ago at this point.
Wow.
So I have had the luxury of keeping these things and having physical spaces for them because I haven't been displaced. I haven't I haven't had a major disaster in my home, so I can hold on to these things.
What made you say, I'm going to hold on to this? Was it just the importance of the class that kind of set you on this journey, or was it just that you loved to collect things already?
I think there are several things. When I was growing up, my mom really encouraged me to keep a journal or a diary, like from age 8, like as soon as I could write like on my own independently and like process my thoughts through writing, I started keeping journals, which I didn't pull out because there's a lot of them and they're like in deep storage.
Oh, I have them too. I have sticker books.
Yeah.
I have tons of sticker books. I'm crazy. I love stickers.
I have a notebook that's basically like a burn book that I just kept with like three of my friends. We would pass it around between class, and it's spiral bound. So my mom, when I first started keeping a diary or a journal, she was like, always write in pen, never write in pencil because it'll fade.
Mm-hmm.
And never keep a spiral bound journal. Never keep anything spiral bound that you actually want to keep because it could rip out and it could get lost. And for whatever reason, that always stuck with me. Like, I also really admire my mother, and I like everything she says is like, you know, is the word, that is the word, and the word is God. And like,
yeah.
And I like
another really older sister thing, another older sister thing, to be
yeah.
honest.
Yeah, because you're so close to your mom too,
yeah,
right?
I
yeah.
am.
But I think that just stuck with me. And so the idea of saving my history through that, like at least through like the archival of like the archival sort of material of or medium of pen on paper in like a bound notebook was ingrained in me. And then my mom also mentioned to me sort of offhandedly that when she went through a really bad breakup before she and my dad got together, she took all of the letters that she and her boyfriend had sent to her and all or to each other and all of the journal entries and burned them.
Oh my God, I did that too.
And
with
she
my
regrets
ex.
It.
Oh, I don't regret it.
And I still have like letters from my high school boyfriend who was trying to get back together with me.
Really?
When I, yeah, I still have
How
them.
Does Josh feel about that?
I think he'd think it was funny.
I know, because like my dad and mom, like we were going through when we were moving once, and like my dad found a bunch of from like an old girlfriend, and my mom found them from like a guy. And my parents just shrugged and laughed. Like, it's been so long. Like, who cares?
Yeah, who cares? It was like we weren't even the same people. Then,
no, exactly.
You know, like literally.
It's so long ago. It's funny. Thanks to Solo Stove, who sent us a Solo Stove for the Video Archives podcast to try. I actually burned all my letters and like photos because I do film photography. Not the negatives. I save the negatives.
Uh-huh.
But the film photos of my ex, and it took like 1 second to burn. It was the crazy. I burned things in there before, and they just like went up in flames, and they
memories
were just gone.
Memories gone in one
yeah,
second.
It was like tears in the rain, baby.
But
like,
if they're memories you don't want to keep,
yeah, it's like who needs them?
Yeah,
get rid of them.
And so it's also interesting to think about like what we do hold on to and what we discard, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that even if I don't know why I kept that then, if it's because I do know that that class is what led me on the path to being like a film studies major and kind of devoting my life to this. But then I didn't know how deep I would get.
No,
you know?
And so, here you are now and you still have it. And I think it's, I almost feel like this should be archived, like what a class was and like what the important movies were. And also like those topics that they said like were like the really difficult topics of the time.
I know.
They're kind of still the difficult topics of today.
Yeah.
So it's like we haven't really gone that far away from where we were.
The language may have changed or developed or evolved, but it's still, exactly, we're still like discussing the same like
issues, you know, and topics.
Subversive and not subversive topics.
Yeah.
So I don't know what led me to hold on to it then, but I'm glad I did. But
you also have here, you have, what are these? These 16 millimeter?
I also have a collection of 16 millimeter home movies from a family from Arizona. And so
these aren't yours.
Have nothing to do with me or my family.
Where'd you get them?
So a friend of mine who frequents estate sales because he's a set designer.
Mm-hmm.
And he likes collecting these things. He was getting rid of them because he didn't have a 16 millimeter projector. I got one for Christmas a couple of years ago, and he was like, do you want to take these and look at them? And they are beautiful Kodachrome, full color footage of this family who I've never met. And
have you ever tried to track them down or like
there's addresses on there, but I haven't because that means I have to get rid of them.
Yeah.
But what I have thought about is digitizing them because there is the other reason why I'm so fascinated by home movies and like the idea of shooting not just in one's own living room and space with their family, because family, you know, footage is just one part of home movies. There's also the documentation that a home movie can bring to history. So like the streets that are photographed.
Oh, and the fashion, homes,
the cars,
the architecture.
Anytime someone steps furniture. Out of a home with, yeah, exactly. It's the like, shoes, it's a time capsule.
The shoes. These home videos are not even from your family, but you've decided to keep them.
I have these, what is it? Seven reels of 16 millimeter. I think they're like 5 minutes each. And there are these milestones in this family's life who lived in Arizona that my friend got at an estate sale. And I've been holding on to them because I know that there's this thing called Home Movie Day. Do you know what Home Movie Day
is?
No,
I don't. What is that?
So at least in major cities, Chicago, New York, and LA, there's one day a year where different local like film institutions, and in the case of LA, it's USC, UCLA, the Academy Film Archive, come together to host a day where folks can bring in their home movies to be inspected.
Oh.
Or digitized, depending on
like, what's the inspection the for? Is it like
the just... inspection would be taking out a reel of 16 millimeter, a reel of 35 millimeter, Super 8, and looking at it, having an archivist actually look at it and say, you know, this looks like it's deteriorated, this looks like it's turning to vinegar, this looks like it's maybe projectable. Like any, they're basically doing like a quality assessment, and maybe looking to see whether it could run through a projector, and then in the case where it can. There's sort of a gathering in a room where Home Movie Day is hosted. This year it was at the Academy Museum.
Oh, that's
and so,
so
in our
nice.
Education studio, we dimmed the lights and had a 16 millimeter projector where we were running people's home movies. And sometimes it was the first time they were seeing them in 50 years.
Because
60
not
years.
Everyone has a projector or
Most
access to it.
Most people do not have a 16 millimeter projector.
Not
everyone. Yeah, yeah.
Most people.
And so it was a chance to make these memories come alive again, or for people who are like two generations or even one generation past when these movies were shot, it was a way to access their family history or their family memories. And it's a really amazing day. And it again, it happens annually. And we were just so lucky to host it this year. So when you were asking me about a topic, actually, it was right after Home Movie Day had wrapped at the museum. And I was like, this is what I want to talk about. Because most moving image collections, the Library of Congress, the Academy Film Archive, UCLA Film and Television Archive, for example, have home movie collections. Many of them have been donated by notable figures. And in the case of the Academy Film Archive, a lot of actors, people in the industry have donated their home movies for preservation. So many that there are 3,000 reels of home movies at the Academy Film Archive. And there is a preservationist and an archivist who is dedicated to that collection.
That's amazing, because I've heard from documentary filmmakers, like specifically Los Angeles ones, the Academy has a really great program for documentary filmmakers and archiving their prints and stuff. So that's was really great to hear about that, but I didn't know about the home movies.
Yeah, I mean the moving image collection. So what you're talking about is if you have a collection of your own personal, like if you're an independent filmmaker, and a lot of documentary filmmakers are, the Academy Film Archive is a place where you can deposit or donate your prints, right? And that means that they're depending on the terms of the agreement, they're either sitting on that shelf or for, you know, as long as they're being preserved, or people like me, a film programmer, can access them and borrow them and project them in our cinemas.
That's so special, because when you get to project them in your cinemas, you get to share them with the world, and also like Los Angeles, especially if these movies take place in Los Angeles, are about Los Angeles, and are about places that are gone.
Yes.
That's so much like when I watch these old movies and I see, like, God, I can't believe that the 70s was like 50 years ago. I'm like, oh my God, like, when I see these places and I'm thinking, oh my God, that doesn't exist anymore. I have like a vague memory of that as a child, and that's not there. And it just looks so different. So it's so special that the Academy does that.
Yeah. And I think for something like this is a local history of this town in Arizona where this family shot all of these movies. And maybe that housing development is different. Maybe it's apartments now. Maybe it's condos. Like, who knows? And there was actually something circulating on Instagram that like several people sent to me the other day that was colorized footage, or color footage, not colorized, but color footage of streets in Burbank, like somebody turning left onto a major street in Burbank. And several people sent it to me because this is where I live. And they were like, I wonder if this is Glen Oaks. Could this be Magnolia? Like, what street is this? And we were trying to like investigate and see. And this is also why I love any film that's shot on location in Los Angeles. And like Larry Karaszewski already stole my idea for this podcast and did Los Angeles movies. But I almost get distracted when I'm watching LA movies to figure out the geography of where they are. And to your point, like whether that place exists or not. not. And in some of the home movies that we showed, we also did a program of home movies that specifically focused on LA sites. So one of them was a home movie just shot by an amateur. And like, how do we define a home movie too, right? A home movie is anything that's shot by an amateur for their own personal use.
Yeah, for personal use. Yeah. Because if like, if you're an amateur and you're shooting for like, you have an idea for a movie or a script or a documentary or something, that's, it's kind of like for other people to see. But yeah, a home video is really never meant for public viewing, I guess.
But I love that it can be viewed publicly. Yeah, exactly. And so somebody, for whatever reason, decided to set up their camera and record the building of City Hall. So we have that at the Academy.
You have that at the Academy? Yes. Really? The building of, wow.
The construction of City Hall and then its final product, wow, which is amazing. Wow,
that person had a lot of foresight. Color,
yeah, to have the, or to just be fascinated with architecture. There are people who, oh, I also love old home movies of like Universal Studios.
Oh, Disneyland. Jinx.
Yeah. And we have some home movies from Disneyland. We have home movies shot on Angel's Flight, the funicular that runs in downtown LA, and home movies that feature Bunker Hill, home movies that feature like parades through Little Tokyo. So like all of these objects are not just like personal memories, they're also documents of a space.
Yeah, I'm going to make a plea right now to people that are listening that maybe want to shoot on video or 16 or Super 8 or whatever you want to shoot, and you want to shoot your home videos, do it. Keep it, because like honestly, in years and years to come, people might be watching them as historical documents.
Yeah.
Because stuff gets lost in the cloud. I never look back at my digital, unless it's around my cat. Yeah. Like that's the only thing I'll look back at. Yeah. But it's like, I'm never looking back at like my videos that I took or photos that I took, but my film photography that I take, I look back at that constantly.
Yeah, same.
And so I want to make a plea to people that are like maybe on the fence about doing film photography or film videography or even video. Just do it. Like, why not?
Yeah, and there's, I mean, even with these VHS tapes that I have and the camcorder, I'm guessing it was a Panasonic, but I have no idea, that my dad had an onboard VHS recorder. So it was recording directly onto a tape. Wow. Like it was this big, bulky thing. And I would say, like, anyone who's even planning to do that, it's so easy to digitize that now. Mm-hmm. Or even with mini DV, you can digitize that and put it, you know, if you're worried about losing it or as an object. And I think that's, you know, the convenience of storing something digitally, I think, is outweighed by the permanence of something that's physical.
Yeah, I've seen, speaking of like when you were saying like about the Burbank streets on Instagram, I saw one that was a Halloween party.
Uh-huh.
That had been, I think, colorized, and they colorized mm-hmm. it. It was amazing seeing everyone's costumes, and it was like as people were coming in. And then I've seen like 35 millimeter or like film slides that have just been like found
mm-hmm.
of
yeah.
Egypt, of yeah. all these places. And my local film developer, they have people that just leave their negatives behind and like never pick them up, don't want them,
tragic,
never pick anything up. I'm like, can I have them? Yeah. No, they can't give them to me, but like, can I have them? They're like, no, we have to throw them away because we can't just be giving out people's like personal things. And right. I'm like,
yeah,
can I have them?
Yeah, but like, still, can I have them?
Please, can I go dumpster dive or something after?
But I think, I mean, similar to your plea of like shooting things on media that's going to survive or that you're going to remember that you have, I would also say, like, If you have like a reel sitting under your bed or in a closet or like family history and family movies that you've never looked at, there are activities and like programs like Home Movie Days in several cities in the United States. And there are also archives that take home movies. There's the Southside Home Movie Project in Chicago. There's the Academy Film Archive here in LA. There's the UCLA Film and Television Archive. And each of them is accepting acquisitions for the most part. I mean, there's some paperwork involved, but like that is the place to make sure that those memories are stored. And who knows, they could be used as like archival footage for a documentary one day, right? Like that's where so much archival footage comes from, are these ephemeral moments and like amateur filmmaking experiences or expressions that are being conformed into a new documentary to tell like an authentic story of a time.
I think it's also just important that even if you donate these things, it can also just be for people that lived back then to experience what life was like. When I went to the New Beverly for a screening once, and it was of this like old, I think it was a Hispanic or a Filipino movie. I can't remember what it was. Hmm. Had a really cool snake dance in it, though. That's all I can remember right now. Green Cobra, something Cobra. Cobra Woman, I think. And there was a gentleman in the audience who had loved the movie as a boy. And, like, his grandson was taking it to him. It was the first time he had seen it in, like, 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he cried seeing it because it was, like, the first time he had seen it in so long. And he had really wanted to see it. You can't find it digitally. And so it's just, like, these things are really important. They're things of our past. And I love them. Okay, I have to ask about this. Is this a grocery list?
So there's another stack of papers, like on very flimsy white paper, that I saved from COVID when we were cooking all of our meals at home.
Oh, yeah. And also you had to like cook with really what you had.
We had to cook with what we had. We had to shop for, we were shopping for 2 weeks at a time usually. And mm-hmm. we did a couple of those like meal delivery programs and we got sick of all of them. And it really just like expanded our cooking repertoire. Like we learned how to make a lot of new things. And so we would put those lists on the refrigerator every day because we would literally meal plan every week.
Yeah, we had to do that too. Yeah.
And I saved all of them because I was like, this was a dark time and very weird, but also like that we were making, that we were creating something physical out of like this really kind of tough experience. What I do wish we had done is saved our movie viewing. I mean, I have my Letterboxd sort of history from that time, but I know some friends who were like writing out their movie viewing history or plan every week so that they could have that to look back on. So I saved those and I don't know if I'll hold on to them.
Well,
but.
So I have a question. Do you have like one meal from then that like you really loved? Like you still cook?
Yeah.
Like kind of,
oh, yeah.
What was it?
It's from Allison Roman's, one of Allison Roman's cookbooks. And I'm gluten-free, so there's a certain kind of, I've figured out what the right kind of pasta is that I can mm-hmm. eat and that doesn't get gummy and gross.
Oh, I'm a rice pasta girl.
Yeah. I like quinoa pasta or brown rice are kind of the go-tos. But also, like, I just buy whatever brand. I forget what brand it is. But I found this pasta that I really like. And there's a dish that is basically as much mushroom as pasta. And it's, like, really delicious, beautiful mushrooms that you cook for a long time. And then and they get kind of browned. And then add that to pasta with just some Parmesan cheese and an egg yolk. Like, no extra sauce.
It's like carbonara, but
it's sort of like a carbonara, but without the meat.
Without the meat. That's really nice.
And we also grew mushrooms during lockdown.
Oh, okay. There you go. That makes it so easy.
Yeah.
And was there one meal that you really hated that you did?
Oh, maybe. I can't remember, though.
We did one where we, like, I had masa for making tamales. Uh-huh. And so we had nothing in the fridge. So I made, like, tortillas. And then we made Mexican lasagna. Uh-huh. And that was, like, our, like, last cupboard fridge thing. Like, we had no food in our house. Like,
yeah.
Whatsoever. There was none. But we made that. And I will always cherish my Mexican lasagna.
Oh, it was good.
No, it wasn't. But it got me through.
Speaking of lasagna, I tried making lasagna for the first time and didn't. This is going to sound so stupid, but I didn't realize that you have to actually like boil the noodles first.
Well, some noodles you don't.
Some noodles you don't. And so I was banking on the fact that you maybe didn't need to. And we were like, tastes great. It's just inedible. Like the pasta, you actually can't chew it. Yeah, that was maybe the worst.
Okay, what is this? This is an expandable note file.
In this little accordion.
Oh my God, that's.
Envelope is, well, what are you seeing in there?
Tickets? They're tickets to music festivals?
I had a big period in my life between age like 17 to 21 where I was going to concerts like every weekend, mostly at the Glass House and at different also like LA venues, so the Fonda and the Orpheum,
and you've kept all of them.
And so I kept, there was a period where I kept most of them and also the wristbands that got you access when you were underage. So that you wouldn't drink, but you could still go in the venue. So that's maybe 3 years of ticket stubs in there.
Wow, and that's so special. Do you like pull these out and look at them and like remember the concerts?
Yeah. Like I just pulled out a Rilo Kiley.
I just pulled that one out too.
That I remember being at the Glass House, which is an all ages venue. It still exists. It feels a little different now, but I have such fond memories of the Glass House, and I remember them because I have those ticket stubs.
That's fun. I do keep like the wristbands. Yeah. I have mine from like my dad takes me to Carly Rae Jepsen whenever she comes to town, and so we go together. And so I have my Carly Rae Jepsen ones, and then I also like whenever I go to Knott's Berry Farm, I keep my Fast Pass bracelets.
God, I haven't been there in so long.
It's like my happiest place on earth.
Our winter formal was at Knott's Berry Farm when I was growing up. Yeah, really? But yeah, the formal wear with then. I mean, at the time this was the year 2000. So we had like platform shoes, like platform sneakers that I decorated mm-hmm. with rhinestones to match my formal dress.
I love that.
And then we just went on rides. I didn't dance, that's so single, like scene dance.
Or like so like emo.
It
quotes.
Was very emo. It was very sinister.
It's like you probably were like the girl that I wanted to be like the early 2000s. God, like, I wanted to be that scene girl so bad.
I have photos to show
you. Oh my God, I need to see them. Oh my God, because you have the archive.
But everyone would call me a poser.
No. No.
No, true.
No, I reject that word. I reject it. it.
Dude, be the, like, dress for the person you want to be.
Yeah. I love it. Oh, my God. I was, like, in, I love scene culture and, like, emo. I always joke people, like, my culture's not your costume for that because I love emo scene. I love all the music. I love everything.
Do you follow Indie Sleaze on Instagram?
I know, but I probably see it through, like,
it's a great account.
Through you.
Yeah.
On
yeah.
my thing. But no, like, I'm, my secret is, like, I love 303 and, like, Panic at the Disco and, like, Fall Out Boy and Blink 182 and, like, all of those people. Like, I should have been a Warped Tour girl, but I wasn't.
I was a Warped Tour. There's a Warped Tour ticket in
there. Is there?
Somewhere.
Oh, that's awesome.
I went 1 year when it was in Ventura.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You're living my dream.
Oh my God. You're living my
dream. What is this, your real map?
That is, so I kept all of the paper objects from my first trip to Europe, which was in 2006. I spent 7 weeks there. And it's, for whatever reason, it's in pristine condition, this Euro Rail map from 2006. And that's how we got around. Like, we flew in to Spain and then traveled to, I think, 6 different countries and then flew back out of Spain after 7 weeks.
Was it life-changing?
It was life-changing. And it was life-changing in that the person I traveled with was maybe the most challenging travel partner you could possibly imagine. It's someone I've known since kindergarten.
Oh, so it's like you love them and you hate them.
Oh, we don't talk anymore.
Oh, okay. So you just, well, I have those too. Believe me, I have like my friends that I met in first grade and then like at, probably actually around that I had a Europe trip with the girl and really? We like broke our friendship partially because of the Europe trip.
I remember at the airport being like, bye.
That's kind of what it was like. Wow.
This is over.
Wow.
Like afterward, this is over.
Yeah. We had one more like this is over thing happen at like a French festival in Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
And like that was it. And then I was like, I'm better off not doing this right now.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I think that like at every level of someone's life, you keep things that are important to you. And sometimes you shed them when you move. But I think like for whatever reason, at the time that I decided to keep these objects, they were important. So maybe they will be another day, like another time. Maybe they will be. I don't know.
What do you say to people? I'm going to guess like my age and younger. So millennials to Gen Z, mostly Gen Zers and also Gen Alpha, I guess, if they're old enough to be listening to this.
Yeah.
But like Gen Zers who really kind of are rejecting keeping things and rejecting collecting. I mean, there's some pockets of like, I think it's bouncing back now. Like we need objects again.
Mm-hmm.
But like, what do you say to people that just kind of let everything go?
I think that if there's something that you have to make that decision for yourself, like it shouldn't be a bandwagon decision. So if you find something that you have in your life that brings you joy and you like looking at it, keep it.
Yeah.
If you can, if you have the luxury to keep it and the space to hold on to it, you know, because not everyone has that either. So I don't know. I think that's what I'd say. And I feel like you feel similarly to me. Like you like holding on to things.
I mean, I do like holding on to things. There was a period of my life where I was like, I don't need any of this. So like, I can kind of shed it. And I think it's like when you're a 14-year-old girl and you're kind of going through that phase of like, who am I? What do I want to keep from my childhood? Who do I want to become as a woman? As you said, like there's periods where you're dressing like a dude or there's periods where you're dressing super girly and you're just trying to find yourself. And one of those things is like, what do I want to hold on to? And so now it's like, I want to hold on to everything that's important to me because I know it could be taken away. And if I own it physically, not just digitally, I can have it. But if I own it digitally, it could just get taken away. It's not really ownership.
Yeah.
How do you think your parents archived versus how you archive today?
My dad keeps a lot of things, but it's interesting because he was just texting with me. I was just in San Francisco this past weekend and he was, I sent him a photo from Chinatown because we did this trip together where we went, it was a work trip for him. We stayed in Chinatown in a small hotel room. It was during the Bush-Kerry debates. I remember this very vividly because we were on different sides of that divide. And we took, we just took a lot of photos and he was asking me when that trip was so that he could try to find those photos. In his archive of photos.
Also
saves things. My mom likes to purge. She likes to get rid of shit.
It's funny. Your mom likes to purge, but she's the one that instilled in you the importance of journaling and also the spiral bound and the writing in pen. I think the writing in pen is so important.
Yeah. I don't even own a pencil. Like I borrow it from Josh.
Get rid of those pencils, Josh. You need a pen. My dad has like very specific pen that he likes.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a Uniball Micro. And he just buys like only those.
Yep.
And I have a very specific pen I like because it has Studio Ghibli art on it. And that's it.
And then you just buy refills for it?
No, I'll just buy more pens.
Okay.
Because they'll just break and I'll just buy more. And that is all the time that we have for today. But KJ, is there any final thought that you'd like to leave the audience with?
Not really. I mean, just
you and Larry Karaszewski both. Larry was like, no, stop talking to me.
I'm done. No, I think we said everything I really wanted to say. And just like it for like the next generation, if you start to find that things are bringing you joy in your life, like don't get rid of them just because you feel pressure to.
Or they're not cool, quote unquote. They're not
quote unquote cool. Like there are parts of myself that I'm like, yeah, that was a regretful hairstyle. Or that was like a bad phase. Bad makeup choice. The makeup choice when I was like using Vaseline on my face as highlighter. Like, yeah, did not photograph well and I probably looked like a lunatic. But
we were all doing it though.
But we were trying things out. So I don't know. If things make you happy, hold on to them until they don't. And that goes for people in your life, too.
Yeah, exactly. Get rid of them. Get rid of them and hold them close.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, KJ, for coming on to the show. If you'd like to keep up with KJ, you can check her out on Instagram and Twitter at KJ_Ralph Miller. That is two underscores, you guys. On Letterboxd at KJ_Ralph Miller. R-E-L-T-H. Or you can see her work programming at the Academy Museum. I'm Gala Avery, and this has been The Gala Show.
The Gala Show is brought to you by Insertomatic. This episode was executive produced by Roger Avery and produced by Gala Avery. Music composed by Andy Milburn. As always, I'm your host, Gala Avery. Copyright 2023, all rights reserved. Despite me sharing the same last name with this charity, I don't have any affiliation with it, besides the fact the issue is very near and dear to my heart. Did you know that in the United States, 2.7 million children currently have a parent in prison, and it's estimated that 10 million children have experienced parental incarceration at some point in their lives? I was one of these kids, and as an adult, I am really grateful to be able to give back to Project Avery. Their mission is to build leadership from within by supporting community through programs such as mentoring and outdoor education, and also to remove the stigma surrounding having a parent that's incarcerated. You don't have to feel alone. If you know a kid who could use these resources or would like to donate money or time to the charity, please go to Project Avery, that's AVARY.org, to check out what this amazing charity is all about. Again, that's ProjectAvery.org. Thank you guys from the bottom of my heart.